Hannah read for us from the Gospel of John, beginning with verse 10, I do want to go ahead and add the first piece to that, the beginning of the Gospel of John, verses 1 through 9, for us to have a collective understanding of this whole passage. This is John 1, 1 through 9. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What had come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. Many churches I know are celebrating Epiphany today. I made reference to it earlier. This is the day that we remember that the three kings coming to visit the Christ child, delivering gifts and then returning, but before warning Mary and Joseph that Herod was after them. And so with urgency, they too fled and went home by another way. It's an important story to hear of Epiphany, but I was struggling with what to do with this Sunday, knowing that it was also still Christmas time. And I thought about it. I thought about the words that we've used during Advent of slowing down and contemplating our faith and what the birth of Christ means to us as followers of Christ. I decided to spend more time in this Christmas season and not push forward just yet. We are still in Christmas, but according to another calendar, people have already assumed Christmas was in the far past. It was last year. We're moving on. We're back at work. We're back at school. Our resolutions probably have already failed. And we're back to our daily grind. I'll take a period and stop for just a minute. Is that I always say that I'll make resolutions for the new year, but I always give them up for Lent. That was bad, wasn't it? Sorry, I broke. Now I have to figure out where I was. But we get into this mundane day-to-day grind, and we forget. Which is why we need a reminder that Christmas isn't just a holiday or a festival, but rather it witnesses to a reality that permeates our whole life. And there could be no better passage to remind us of this ongoing significance of Christmas than this passage here in John. Why? Because John is inviting us to contemplate a non-sentimental Christmas that's filling us up with hope and joy for the whole year. A friend of mine posted this poem as she was preparing herself for Epiphany Sunday, but I found these words and I found this poem to be something that we could use during this Christmas time as well. So I'd like to share with you this poem. It's by an unknown author. It's entitled, When Will We Have Time? If, as Herod, we fill our lives with things, and again with things, if we consider ourselves so unimportant that we must fill every moment of our lives with action, when will we have time to make the long, slow journey across the desert, as did the Magi? Or sit and watch the stars, as did the shepherds? Or brood over the coming of the child, as did Mary? For each one of us, there is a desert to travel, a star to discover, and a being within ourselves to bring to life. Join me in prayer as we prepare ourselves for this day. God, help us to slow down and listen to our inner self. Let us listen for the journey and discovery that can be exciting within us. Amen. So coming back to John's Christmas story, can look at it and we realize that it's not dallying with angels or shepherds, and it seems to know nothing of a young mother, and there's no mention of magi. Indeed, John's story is hardly about the birth of Jesus, but instead it focuses on the difference that the birth makes for all of us. There are, on the whole, just two crucial lines that deal with Jesus' birth and what we often call the incarnation. The first one is in the first verse of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the second, in verse 14, and the Word that was with God and is God became flesh and dwelt among us. And there it is. John's Christmas story, the story of God becoming human, taking on our pain and our life that we might live and love and struggle and die with hope. Yesterday, I spent the day in Hartford on that nice rainy day that we had yesterday with our presbytery for a third installment for a training on what we are calling anti-racism, a buzzword. It was a day meant for contemplation of what that word means and what we as a presbytery are doing to achieve this. So when we hear that word anti-racism, it seems pretty easy to define, doesn't it? But in the time of being together, we realized that it was much more than just saying it's the opposite of. We discovered our uncomfortability with the word and what it means for us, because none of us want to admit it, that we are racist. And we feel much better when we can sit there and say, ah, but they are the ones that are doing it and not me. But being confronted and realizing that it is much more of a cultural, systemic issue that we blindly participate in without even realizing it. I bring this up to not have a conversation at this moment about racism, or to make this sermon centered around the needs of what need to be done, but I mention it in the context of this passage for today and the Christmas story that John is providing for us. Here is a simplistic story, the Word, God, becoming flesh, taking on, as I said, our pain and life and giving us grace, hope, and peace with God. John also spends time in the passage describing humanity and its relationship with God by shifting this Christmas story of Jesus' birth to ours. And if we listen again to these verses that we often skip over in our haste to get to the close of his two-verse Christmas story, let us listen closely to these words. He was in the world, and he and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born, not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. Jesus came that we might become children of God. Children, that is, who are not dominated by the circumstances in which we find ourselves, not defined by our limitations or hurts, and whose destinies are not controlled by others. Rather, we are those individuals who know ourselves to be God's own beloved. Oftentimes, we allow certain elements of our life to dominate and define us. Things like our upbringing, our interests, our good experiences, even our bad ones, our past triumphs, and even our tragedies. These things matter. But we allow them not just to describe parts of our lives, but we allow them to all of a sudden define it. And not only do we do that to ourselves, we begin to use that as a lens, and we begin to determine what is best for others. Psychology would call this projection. When I was living in California, I worked with adults with mental disabilities, learned skills of living independently, and it ranged from making meals on their own, how to grocery shop on a budget, how to use the bus system, how to manage a checking account. And sometimes I would have clients that had both a mental disability and also had mental health as well. I recall one client that I had, and we'll call him Jim. He was living in an apartment that was unclean and it was unsafe, and he did not have any privacy. He didn't have a kitchen. He didn't really have any way of making his own meals. He found ways of bartering with other people, trading goods that he had, possessions that he had, in order to have something to eat or something to wear or to see if he could use their restroom because he didn't have one. I worked with Jim to find a place that was a better part, that was in a better part of the city. I worked with Jim and we found a safe, clean place. We found an apartment that had even some amenities of free cable and utilities. And there was a laundry area that was provided for those that lived there. So we were able to do his laundry. We were able to use the money that he had to buy new pillows and linens and a bed. We were able to set it all up in his room. There was even a shower with running water and a place to make meals. I was very pleased with myself for helping Jim live comfortably. A week or so went by, and I went to go check on Jim, and he wasn't there. Some of his clothes were still there. Some of the clothes I recognized on other people's bodies. His bed was stripped of linens. His pillows were still there. A TV was missing. I wasn't sure what had happened to Jim. I looked for him, finally found him, back in the apartment complex of where he was originally. And I asked him, "Jim, why are you here? Why are you not in your new place?" He looked at me and he said, "I didn't like it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't feel safe. I know how to take care of myself here." I assumed what was best for Jim. I assumed that I knew better. I didn't feel safe, and I would have liked it better in the new apartment, and so I made assumptions that he would too. I projected my own experiences and decided for Jim what was best for him. It wasn't out of malice, but I didn't work with Jim where he was at and listen to what would be helpful for him. I had already made a decision for him. These are exactly the things that we talked about yesterday when I was at that training. We may not think about this too much as racism, but we do project a certain criteria of what is socially acceptable and what isn't. We project what is considered success. We project how someone should live. We project because it's the dominant culture that we have, and without realizing it, we shut down and we dismiss any kind of other voice that may be there and present. In these verses, John invites us to hold all of the pieces that describe us, recognize the value that it makes us who we are, but to be careful to make it definitive. What is definitive, and the most important thing, is that God has called us God's own children, individuals who hold infinite worth in God's eyes, deserving of love and respect, and will be used by God to care for God's beloved world in the multiple and amazing ways that we all bring. This is the second Sunday of Christmas. So on the second Sunday of Christmas, may you recognize the beauty and elegance of all of God's creatures and what is brought to the table, even if it's something that we don't understand. Amen.